From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, I hope that last hour didn't make your head explode like mine. Holy cow, I had no idea this system was so cattywampus. Well, unbelievable. Well, we'll try to help you to figure out what's going on. So after hearing the last hour, that's another 60 or 70 minutes encouragement for you to take care of yourself, take care of your kids so you don't have to go to the doctor, because it's just bonkers, and it's going to get more bonkers according to Dr. Held and what our political heroes want to do, and taking over healthcare, Medicare, whatever. It's just nuts. George Orwell, God love you. Howard Vlieger, he was really had been a nice resource for us with the whole genetically modified stuff and glyphosates, told us about Michelle Perro. She's an MD, and she's put together a book called What's Making Our Children Sick, and co-authored it with Dr. Vincent Adams, and they're on the line in California, and two ladies who are probably still just wiping the sand out of their eyes because it's early there. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Wiping the sand out of our eyes, correct.
Well, that's good. How have you been doing with all the fires out there? Are you out of harm's way?
We are. It was pretty rough going up here in the north for the first fires, and the second ones haven't really affected us, although we see and smell a little bit of the smoke that drifts up here, but it's pretty scary. Mm-hmm. We usually don't get fires into December.
Are they overall in the state? Are they getting a handle on this whole thing?
Yeah, the Southern California fires are, you know, being managed better, but they're still burning. It's incredible. We've been dry so long, and Southern California has been super dry. So, and there's so much brush. So, you know, it's the perfect storm for fire. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, on the Skype thing, I was doing a Skype call the first hour, and I haven't quite figured out how to answer the Skype and let you listen until we're done with it. But I haven't figured that part out. So I'm sorry I hung up on you, and it was just one of those things.
Well, we're all good. No worries.
We're all good. Okay, well, two ladies, tell us about, both of you, a little bit about yourselves. Dr. Perro, you're a medical doctor, right? And your interest in the glyphosate thing started when? And then your co-author, and tell us about her, and she can tell us about who what she's up to.
Sure, Patrick. So I am a pediatrician. I've been a pediatrician for almost 38 years now.
Wow.
Most of my life.
Yeah.
And what happened was, in about 2006, one of my patient's moms wanted me to get involved, because I was a pediatrician, to stop the spray of a certain pesticide along the coast of California, mostly Northern California, against the light brown apple moth. And frankly, Patrick, I was kicking and screaming, not wanting to do it. I was a busy mom, two small children, busy medical practice, and I did not have the bandwidth to take this on. Mm-hmm. But something compelled me to do it, and I did it, and boy, we stopped the spray. Sitting in our kitchens, drinking a cup of coffee, and somehow we managed to do it. And I really don't know how we did it. I think there was a hand from above helping us out.
Yeah.
But through that work, and a very inspired mom — moms are smart people, I listen to women — and she said, "Michelle, what do you think about GMOs?" And I didn't have a thought about GMOs, Patrick. I knew nothing. I said, "I don't think much about it, should I?" She said, "Oh, yes, you do. You should read Jeffrey Smith's book, Seeds of Deception."
Yeah.
And she spoke. I listened. I read the book. And sure enough, on page 16 of that book, I read about the work of this researcher, and we can talk about that later, And light bulbs went off in my head because the work I saw of this researcher, his name is Dr. Pusty of rats.
Yes, we know Dr. Pusty. Well, we know of him. Is he still living?
Well,
Pusty. We talked to him. We talked to him about 10 years ago. Yeah.
So unfortunately have a stroke, Patrick. And I hear he's either in very bad shape and not functioning or he's passed. I have to communicate with his wife, who's still with us.
And so what did you learn from him? And did you meet him? Or?
I unfortunately did not. I wanted to, but I have spoken with many people who had the fortunate experience of meeting with Dr. Pusty. Jeffrey Smith did, Susan Downs did. I believe Howard met him, Howard Bleeger, the farmer you were talking about earlier in your show. And Dr. Pusty's work transformed my practice because all of a sudden I understood very real the effect of GM food and their associated pesticides on children's health. It became very clear to me, although I was extrapolating rat data, and I've been on it ever since. And there long answer.
Question. That's great. This is 10 years ago. And then your co-author with you, then Vincent,
thank you. Yes. So, you know, I'm a medical anthropologist. I'm at UCSF. And, you know, I've been publishing research on the social dynamics and politics of health and medicine for many years. And, you know, my training is in the ethnographic method, which means I look at and try to write about the human effects of bigger social and structural problems in the medical system. Hmm. So when I met Michelle and I started to hear her stories, I just was so compelled by her stories. And I thought, I want to write a book about her and the phenomenon that she represents in the world today about medicine and about science. And then I found out she had been wanting to write a book for a long time. So I thought, well, let's join forces. And, I have to say that, you know, I think like a lot of people, when I first started hearing her stories, I was really skeptical about her position on GM foods. And I think like a lot of other people, when they go to the internet and they read the first layer of what they can see there, and even when they get down to the second layer of the science, it would be pretty hard to be convinced that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And so I decided that I wanted to really dig in a little deeper, and I started reading over her shoulder, and I started visiting. We interviewed her patients, and I went to some of the GMO conferences with her, and I really came to the conclusion that this was a huge problem, and we needed to actually try to get in and pull out some of the truth elements that were still lingering there that had been hidden, and it resulted in this book, which has been a real joy for me.
Well, with talking with Howard and 10 years ago, we had a chat with Mr. Pusty and all the other people of Jeffrey Smith over the years. Are these things really bad? I mean, just to have a GMO sandwich, I mean, or a GMO corn tortilla. I mean, give us an idea of what your opinion is in the science shows of how good, bad, or good, the bad, and the ugly of these things.
Yes, so often it's really hard to find studies that just look at the genetic modification process. And I've asked myself that very question, Patrick. Is it just the GM process? Is it the GMO process and the pesticide? And if the pesticide, is it just the glyphosate, which is the main component of Roundup, or the Roundup, the complete formulation? And through various scientists' work, Dr. Pusty, Dr. Seralini, and Dr. Antonio, it appears in my mind without a doubt that the genetic modification process, and actually Dr. Belinda Martineau from UC Davis as well, have shown that the process itself causes physiologic and untoward changes in humans. Absolutely.
The process itself, in other words, just taking a corn thing and doing something weird to it to make it, I don't know, stronger, happier, more yellow, whatever they do, that screws up the body's ability to deal with it?
It does. Well, there are a couple things that go on with it as far as we can understand. The GM process causes changes in our physiology, and the most recently shown this year that it causes production of certain chemicals that can be toxic in large amounts, and they're called polyamines. So that is one thing that we know from the genetic modification process. Also, Dr. Pusty, 20 years ago, beautifully showed that the genetic modification process caused changes, physically visible changes, in rats' stomachs and intestines. Mm-hmm. And those are exactly what I correlated to what Dr. Adams and I write about in the book, leaky gut. And I think looking back, this is what's going on. Now, you have to appreciate that we're extrapolating data from rats, chickens, and pigs.
Yes.
I don't have any human data on this. There has been no human studies, which is shocking in itself, that we don't have human data on the effects of genetically modified food and all the rogue proteins that are produced, and we can go into that later if you want, from this process.
So it's actually changing the physiology of the body, and it's producing a chemical that you call polyamines, yes, that are actually damaging to the body as well.
So we think, you know, Dr. Antonio wrote about it in January of this year in a beautiful paper looking at this cutting edge technology called metabolomics. And he really, and his team King's College in London, and did a wonderful job. And they found that these polyamines that were altered, they have great names, Patrick, putrescine and cadaverine.
Oh, good.
Those are great names.
Yeah.
Which were... we have them in our body and they serve a role, but in very high amounts, they can be tumor forming. And they found high amounts of these chemicals as well as something called oxidative stress. So that's what Dr. Antonio found just recently. So that's the most recent literature we have on the genetic modification process.
You know, I would just jump in that a lot of what's going on right now in the world of GMO sciences and the people who are curious about it and worried about it is that there's new information about how the body works, and particularly the fact that we have a gut that is lined with microbes that we now know are probably impacted by many of these chemicals, possibly by the modification and rogue proteins, but certainly by the pesticides that come along with genetically modified food, and particularly the herbicide Roundup and its active ingredient glyphosate. So this is something that scientists didn't know about early on when they were inventing these. We now know that these microbes are a key to our overall health, and that gut function is at the root of most health and the source of most chronic disorders. So now that we have new information there and we have new ways of testing the microbes in our gut and also metabolomics research, we're looking at, you know, we're getting new information all the time. We don't have a firm grasp of what's going on in human bodies, as Michelle said, but we do know that from animal studies, there's good reason to be worried. And so there's a certain amount of speculation that goes on around this. And what the book did, in my mind, is we tried to connect the dots between these different fields to make the connections between them.
Huh. Do you think there's a lot of moms? The book is not even really just now coming out, right?
Yeah, it was officially released December 8th, but it was on the market from November 30th. We're fresh.
Oh, good, good. What's making our children sick? So you think when moms read this, and we have listeners around the world, that they would go totally organic after reading your book? Just you think? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, gee, Patrick, that is the hope. There is a way to fix these children, and I've done it. I've done it clinically over and over and over again. As I mentioned already, I've been at this a while. I'm old. And
you don't look old. No, you're not old.
Oh, you're sweet. But yes, and we go into a couple cases in the book and where we really show that the changes that going organic made in the family. Now, this has been an interesting question, and I've been queried about this frequently. When you change your patient's diet so they get better, I could not answer that because I do many changes at once, Patrick. You know, children aren't lab rats, right? So if I have a kid who's sick, I'm changing their diet. I'm giving them various supplements and herbs and homeopathics and manipulative medical treatments. Mm-hmm. However, what we did see was that the parents and the siblings got better. And we have a few cases in the book that we went into, and some of those cases were shocking and life-changing for me and give patients hope.
You know, I would also jump in on that, you know, this is the tragedy of our times in some ways, that if you think about the health of the population in terms of just one ingredient, which is the food we're eating, mm-hmm. then you start to understand that if we're eating food that is causing problems to our guts, then we have a public health crisis. And this is partly what explains, we think, the massive increase in chronic disorders among children and among people in general. But it's more than just a family. What it takes is more than just a family deciding they're going to go organic. We know organic food costs more. We know that there are food deserts, and many people don't have access to organic foods. And so we really are trying to make the claim that this is a more of a public health problem than it is an individual choice problem.
Yeah.
We need to provide food that is healthy, that's been grown in healthy soil, and that has nutrients that won't harm our guts.
We spent the last hour talking about the whole medical industrial complex with a great lady, Dr. Held in San Antonio, that made my head explode what's going on. And what they would want, what they want to do, right, with the medical freedom and the government takeover of medicine. And I know, Vincent, you probably can address this. Can you just give us a picture of what's going on with the FDA, USDA, and Monsanto, and Archer Daniels Midland, and this whole group that's kind of just bought into the GMO meme?
Right. So, you know, it's a huge problem. And I was just reading Oreskes' book on Merchants of Doubt, and, you know, the connections between the tobacco scientists who came out in support of tobacco, even though everyone knew that they were that tobacco was carcinogenic and nicotine was, with the climate denier contingent. And, you know, the GMO story is really the missing piece of this history, I would say. There's a huge amount of financial investment in keeping our crops dependent on agrochemical industries, and it's been that way, for 100 years, or at least 60 years. And so there's a huge investment in keeping things that way, and we know that the regulatory agencies that were put in place to protect the public sort of missed the ball. It's created gaps around genetically modified foods, partly because a lot of the foods were classified as generally recognized as safe, meaning they were the genetic equivalent of other foods that had been bred through hybridization techniques or selective cultivation. And so that was accepted. And in the UK, there are different standards that are used. So it fell the idea of regulating GM foods or testing them on humans before they were released to the public fell through the cracks. That just didn't happen. The USDA has no interest in that because they really only care about whether it impacts the crop, the animal husbandry industry. The EPA doesn't care about it. What they do care about is the regulation of pesticides. And what's interesting is that the most important genetically modified crop that is of concern today is the use of Roundup Ready seeds and producing Roundup Ready crops, which enables the increased use of Roundup, and which means our foods are absorbing all of that. But the second one, which is the use of Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT, is essentially a technique that reduces the need for insecticide, but it does this by turning our food into a kind of pesticide. And yet the EPA does not regulate that food as if it's a source of toxicity.
I thought bacterial thuringiensis is a IPM, integrative pest management, safe thing to use in the garden.
Well, if you spray it topically on the plant, it's been used by farmers safely for years.
Uh-huh.
But genetic modification process, every cell in the plant now produces that toxin, the BT toxin. It's in every cell. So when the insects eat that BT toxin corn, their stomachs literally explode. Now, it was thought that we would be able to digest this, having to do with a very acidic pH of our stomachs, and it wouldn't be harmful to us.
Right.
Now, that may not be true because this BT toxin comes kind of preloaded, and many individuals no longer have enough stomach acid, either because of what's happening with their gut and or they're on antacids like Prilosec and other antacids. So this BT toxin is circulating into the bloodstream. The effect on humans, unclear. There's only one study out of Canada from Montreal which actually showed the BT toxin in moms, and it was floating in the bloodstream. And we don't know the effect, Patrick.
Three issues, ladies, that we can put our arms around. You're just genetically engineering a food like you talked about earlier, just whatever, make it rounder, fatter, greener, whatever they do. Then you have the glyphosate issue and the Roundup, and then you also have the BT. Are these three separate different effects on the gut?
Well, this is a really good question. We don't know, because we don't eat genetically modified food by itself. It comes already with Roundup. I mean, it's herbicide tolerant. So the idea, when you have a genetically modified crop like soy, mm-hmm. corn, canola, sugar beets, alfalfa. I mean, papayas from Hawaii. There are many Arctic apples. There are many genetically modified crops now. So they are sprayed. And so we don't eat just genetically modified food. We eat it with sprayed. There are over 700 formulations now of glyphosate, maybe more now, on the market. Some of them are have other chemicals. They're called adjuvants or inerts, and there's nothing inert about them. So these chemical compounds of the genetically modified food with the pesticide, either glyphosate and or with adjuvants such as POEA, and there are others, can make more toxic events. We suspect from the work of Seralini that the most toxic formulation is the genetically modified food with the most toxic compilation, which is Roundup. What we also don't know is individual susceptibility. Now, you might be able to eat that GM tamale and you're fine, whereas your grandson, not so much, because our kids are much sicker than we are. We have a reverse in the health of our children. Years ago, every generation was sicker,
healthier, right?
Than the previous. Now we've seen a reverse in that trend where our children are sicker than we are.
So the little ones are coming in. By the way, we're talking with the authors of What's Making Our Children Sick. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. Mom and Dad, you need to get this book, Michelle Perro and also Dr. Vincent Adams. So and if you want to join the conversation, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We're live here December 16th. So you're saying that the kids, the little ones, are coming in sicker than they were 50 years ago because of all this stuff, all this GM stuff?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Wow. And Dan and I have looked into this issue. So a couple things we have to know. One out of two kids now in America has a chronic disorder. The kids we are seeing now have issues that we didn't see before. So, for example, the most shocking data that you need to know are rates of autism. It was autism, and autism is a neurocognitive disorder, meaning it affects the brain. But children with autism also have major gut dysfunction. The gut and the brain are linked. It was previously reported that 1 in 43 boys had autism, 1 in 68 kids. I've heard anecdotally we're down to 1 in 34 now, hot off the press. That data was released like 2 days ago. So it's changing before our eyes, not to mention rates of asthma, obesity, eczema. Those are some atopic diseases. Autoimmunity, profound. Food allergies are skyrocketing. And in levels reported by the CDC, this data is not anecdotal, and a massive change in our children's health.
So you're saying the 1, 2, 3-year-olds today, 1 out of 2 have some kind of chronic thing going on, the ones that you mentioned, and you're saying that they're coming in and their guts are damaged at birth?
Some of them are birth because, you know...
Okay, we're getting a lot of background noise, so don't move your microphone or don't touch anything. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
Some of these babies are born pre-polluted. That's been shown as well. They're affected not just by mom and having spent the past 40 weeks, right, in mom's environment and whatever she was exposed to, but dad as well. So we know from an environmental working group study about 10 years ago that babies were shown to have at least 236 chemicals on board. It's not just the pesticide. There are no studies in humans on the effect of this polychemistry and polytoxic effect on children. So kids, when they have intestinal permeability, and which is also called leaky gut, and Dr. Adams and I go into it in the book, their guts are so inflamed, it's not just the pesticide, all the chemicals they're being exposed to, whether it's plastics, styrenes, parabens, heavy metals, are entering their bloodstream from this damaged gut. It's a profound issue, and a lot of these chemicals are heading, right to the brain.
So you have a 2-year-old and moms don't know. So they give them whatever, Cheerios or something, and they have a genetic GMO corn, and it could be damaging their gut, and the moms don't know. I mean, because most moms don't know, so, you know. Is this kind of a food more difficult or easier to damage the kid's guts or someone 40, 50, 60 years old?
Well, it's more problematic for children. And what I tell people are children are not little adults. So a 2-year-old is not equivalent to a 60-year-old. because children's cells are growing, right? So they're always turning over, and they have a very rapid turnover, especially in the gut. The cells in the gut are turning over super quickly. So they have this rapid metabolism. They're growing at a profound rate, right? They change before our eyes almost daily sometimes. And their need for nutrients, in a sense, for body weight, exceeds ours. They're closer to the ground, so they have more hand-to-mouth activity. And so whatever's on the ground, and you can imagine what's there, can go right into the mouth because of children's behavior. That also affects. And children's respiratory rates are quicker than ours, so they breathe faster. So any environmental pollutants, and remember, glyphosate is in the air as well, they will get more of a toxic load for their body weight. So imagine a 10-kilo kid, 20 pounds, and how much they'll get compared to a 160-pound adult. So they're getting more for body weight. In addition, the surface area of their skin is bigger, and skin is an absorptive organ. Also takes up chemicals and toxins and toxicants. So they get more absorbed that way as well. So our children are very vulnerable, in addition to our pets, also another vulnerable community. So yes, the answer is they are more vulnerable.
I would just also add to that, that one of the things that we talk about in the book through a lot of the case studies is it's not going to affect everybody, as Michelle said. Not everyone is going to be impacted the same way by the same toxic load or burden. But you take a kid who starts out being born C-section, which means they've got a compromised microbiome. Their gut isn't as populated as it should be with healthy microbes. Then in the first few months of life, let's say their mother is on antibiotics because of the C-section, and the child is then getting antibiotics in their gut, which also impacts the gut, kills off the healthy microbes. And then let's say they start to get some kind of chronic colds, things that need, or viral, not viral, bacterial infections that need more antibiotics. You've got a kid who's got a real compromised gut. And then you put that food into their gut on top of that, which is not nutritional or not as good in its nutritional capacity as organic food. And it's loaded with Roundup, which means it's got glyphosate, which means it's got an antibiotic. And this is the kid who ends up with chronic health problems. Now, you might have another child who's not born C-section, who hasn't been exposed to a lot of antibiotics, who's going to do fine on the Cheerios.
For a while, though. But I mean, yeah, and but eventually the GMO Cheerios are going to, for most kids, how would you phrase that, the probability of it damaging the gut in a child?
Yeah.
How would you
basically
know?
It catches up with you. And the problem is it presents, you know, sometimes the effects on the gut are not immediate. So that's why it's hard to correlate what your health issues are. And
of course, yeah. And most of the traditional docs that most people go to, they don't make the connection anyway, right, ladies? I mean, they just don't. So you could have runny nose and ear infections and whatever, skin or diarrhea or whatever kids get, you know, stuff, colds, flus. And never make the connection with the gut and the immune system that's in the gut, would they? I mean, docs most docs don't know this stuff.
You know, it's not the way traditional medicine is taught. What we try to do in integrative medicine, or the field also is known as functional medicine, is go to the root cause to understand what's causing the issue and to put the human body together as a system. You know, it's not just a series of organs like, you know, a lung and a kidney.
Right.
We are a complex system, biologic system, where we just don't want to pharmaceutically hone in on one issue. We want to understand why this child, this adult, has this issue and treat from the root. That's what we try and do.
You know, I want to just add also, I mean, one of the interesting things and one of the reasons I thought this would be such a great story is Michelle's practice is truly integrative. Meaning she uses, you know, normal, regular medicine. She's trained as a Western MD, but she also uses techniques and diagnostic and therapeutic techniques that are not in the standard clinical guidelines for practicing physicians. So when her patients come in, she has them keep food diaries to try to figure out what foods they're having a strong reaction to. Maybe not allergic reaction, but sensitivity reactions. And she gets them off those foods. Then she looks at their microbes to see what kind of populations of microbials are in their gut and whether there's a healthy balance or an unhealthy balance. She looks at urine samples and blood samples to look at toxic load. Are there chemicals? Is this kid someone who's got a lot of toxic ingredients or poisons in their bloodstream? And then she starts figuring out ways to get rid of the toxins and supplement with things that are going to restore a healthy balance for the child. And this is really remarkable. I mean, I don't know why all doctors aren't doing this.
Yeah.
And the tools are out there and they're available, but they're not being used yet.
Yeah. Pediatrician Michelle Perro is with us, and also Dr. Vincent, right? Adams, I can't read my handwriting. Can you ladies stick around a little bit? And because I want to talk about some things that moms can do. And can you stick around?
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I'm having a good time. So stay right there. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We were not able to talk with Brandon Amalani on Tuesday. Our internet just fell down, gallboon. Mercury was, I don't know what Mercury was doing. But if you want to look at some really fun products, check out Brandon's site, Shen Blossom. He sent me a little care package for my rebirth anniversary a few weeks ago. I'm just very impressed by these products. A traditional Chinese medicine guy, Brandon, and they really do small batches. And I mean so small. He's going to come out with some face care, body care stuff that he says is so amazing that they're going to only have enough for about 50 people to use it ongoing. They're going to have a little club. I mean, that's what he's doing. I mean, this guy's out of control. I mean, they have their own little goji berry or Shizandra and goji berry place. I think it's the goji berries. No, it's Shizandra. Shizandra up in the Northeast. Chinese medicine doc who's growing these organic Shizandra and freezing them right on the land. I mean, they're just doing everything they can to get the most primo superfoods they can in a little container, which is all Myron glass. So this is like the real deal, right? The real deal. So if you're going to spend your money on these things, and there's thousands and millions of products out there just saying, buy me, and I'll cure this and I'll cure that. If you're going to spend your money on these kinds of superfoods and elixirs and magical mushrooms and herbs and ginseng, you go ahead and pay a little bit more and get the real deal. Get the real stuff from somebody that's doing it in traditional ways with such great care that you'll just go, holy cow, wow, how could you do that? The Hoshu Wu formula is out. And that's a kidney thing, I believe. And kidney is just, wow, it's so incredible. The things that go on with the body connected with the kidneys. And, you know, as Michelle was saying, that this every little cell, every little thing is all hooked up together, kidneys and lungs and liver and gallbladder and spleen and all these things. And they get out of wacko, and the herbs and superfoods can help if you get different kinesiology or different tests and say, oh, your kidney can use a little support. Well, this is fun. This is a fun way to do medicine, and might as well do the best. You can get 50-year-old ginseng, 50-year-old that they use organic sake to make, and it's the real deal. They have medicinal mushrooms, good stuff, and reishi mushrooms. It's all at Shen Blossom right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. If you're going to spend your money on these kind of things, spend a little bit more and get some really good, authentic products that you know have a good chance of working with your body on an informational, spiritual level as well as help you out. Previously, with research scientist at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, PhD, and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfotransferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate. The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's where the sulfotransferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. Because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, oneradionetwork.com. Previously with chemist, biologist, and nutritionist George Altgeld, we asked him this. And so what do you think about Dr. Seneff's contention that as these glyphosates are in the soil, they bust the sulfur cycle, and that's really detrimental to the body?
It's extremely detrimental. Sulfur is such an important detoxifying agent for the entire body and especially for the liver. You've got to have trace minerals so that the liver can build these compounds that are essential for getting itself cleaned. And that lady who was talking about sulfur, man, play that ad every chance you get, because our foods are so deficient in sulfur, and it is a big deal for the liver to have enough sulfur to make all those compounds that it uses to detoxify itself. Not just sulfur, they're all important, but sulfur is the one that we're so deficient in, and we need sulfur.
Thanks, George. I had some this morning. You might want to give it a try. You can click an order right on the front page of oneradionetwork.com. Three locations, three prices, delivered. And if you like more than £4 for a discount, email me, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on oneradionetwork.com.
Bless the beast and the children, for in this world they have no voice, they have no choice. Bless the beast and the children.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Good morning. It's December 14, 2017. We're talking with pediatrician Michelle Perro, an MD, and also Dr. Vincent Adams, co-authors of the book, What's Making Our Children Sick? Available at Amazon. You can shop through our website if you will, and we'll probably make more commission than the two ladies make. You know, though, you don't make a lot of money selling bugs, do you? It's just part of the deal.
No, we're not in it for the money.
I know that. I was just being silly. I know that. Trust me.
We're not quitting the day job, Patrick.
Yeah, that's right. Talking to you for 45 minutes, I can tell right away you're not. Wow. So, do we know the connections between the GMOs, the glyphosates, this and just genetically stuff we've been talking about here, and the autism? Because you put out some pretty startling numbers. So 1 in 34 now?
That's what it's looking like, Patrick. There is some good data emerging about autism and autistic spectrum disorders, what we refer to it as, and it is clear that kids on the spectrum have profound intestinal permeability, leaky gut is what we call it, and an imbalance in their microbiome, as well as other things. And I don't want to get into, you know, autism specifically, but in relation to glyphosate, it's clear to me and Roundup that it has an effect on their gut, because glyphosate, as Dr. Adams already mentioned, is an antibiotic patented by Monsanto as an antibiotic. So it disrupts likely the microbiome. But in addition, a glyphosate binds nutrients, and particularly metals. And we need those metals to run biologic function. And the kind of metals that we need are like zinc and magnesium. And there are over 200 reactions, I think 250 perhaps, in the brain that require these metal nutrients. So glyphosate is a chelator. That's how it was originally formulated in the 1970s. And so these children come in with extremely low nutrient levels when you check them. And you have to check them a certain way. Many pediatricians don't look at these nutrient levels. So these children are at an even more significant deficit because they have the intestinal leakiness. They have the disruption of their microbiome, which can't do all sorts of things that we can talk about. And they have low nutrient levels. And then coupled with any heavy metals they're exposed to, this creates the perfect storm.
So
it's important to remember that autism is a very complex, autism spectrum disorder is a very complex problem. And there are many possible causes. Sure. This is not the We're sort of in a speculative territory here, but we are arguing in the book that we need to look at some of these connections between the gut and the brain. And the fact that Michelle, in a number of cases, has had kids who are caught very early, who she's able to treat through this massive reorganization of their diet, their nutritional level, their supplements, their mineral levels, their getting rid of the metals, who actually get significantly better.
They get better.
So they get better.
So explain to us, we have a saying around here, talk to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever. That helps us to explain to us what really this leaky gut thing is and how the GMO and the glyphosates can disrupt the gut regardless of what age you are.
So, for example, along your intestinal lining, there are microbes there that protect and have a protective function. And they also are responsible for detoxification, and they help support your immune system. We're mostly microbial in microbes, which are germs, and they're in a certain balance in our body. So when we eat this glyphosate-laden food, and it's been every year, it's been more and more as weeds become more resistant, foods are in our food crops are more heavily sprayed, we're ingesting more. One of the things that is likely happening is that the glyphosate can be affecting this microbial protection layer that lines our gut. And this can create our little soldiers that line the gut called zonulin may be disrupted. Whereas these little soldiers that protect the gates can no longer function as well. The microbes have been disrupted from the pesticide, and foods are incompletely broken down, passing through these what should be tight junctions. With these gates normally open and close, but now they're not functioning properly. There's a little malfunction at the gate. So foods are in it before they're completely broken down, are passing into the bloodstream, and our immune system is recognizing these foods as foreign invaders and hence mounting an immune response. This is the definition of inflammation. If it goes on long term unchecked, this is the definition of chronic inflammation. Now, remember, Patrick, not only incompletely digested foods are passing, but other microbes and germs are passing, and other toxicants like the ones I mentioned before, the plastics, the metals, the air pollution, the particles, whatever is coming through is getting right through this intestinal barrier that is now semi-permeable and not functioning properly.
And it gets into the blood, actually into the blood. The body looks at it as an invader, tries to get rid of it, and can cause autoimmune issues and could do everything from low thyroid function to who knows what.
Well, it does cause these disruptions. And when you're in a state of chronic inflammation and your immune system is now activated, other things that you might not be so sensitive to, all of a sudden you're sensitive to because your immune system is turned on. And so that is what we think is partially leading to this massive food allergy and food intolerance situation that we're seeing in people, not just children, and adults as well, is because the immune system is now activated.
So the immune system is hot, and so you do maybe something that just even good organic or grass-fed milk or something like that, or raw milk or some food that the body, even a good quality food, can look at it as, well, I just can't do this. And then kids get allergies. They call them allergies.
We talk about that because then what happens is even the quality food, which you're referring to, can become an offending agent because the gut is so inflamed. And those are the most severe kids. And now, we see these severe gut issues For example, there's inflammatory bowel disease, which is an autoimmune disorder of the gut, is exponentially increasing in children. Huh. The guts are so inflamed that even the quality foods become toxic to children. Wow. That is our issue. Yep.
And these little ones coming in now, their guts can be inflamed at birth because mom didn't know was eating GMO foods too?
Yes. And that is one of the most difficult things I'm seeing. And boy, when I see a kid like this, it's very challenging.
Oh, man.
Seeing little infants who cannot tolerate mom's milk, cannot tolerate any formula, organic or otherwise. And the moms, we put them on these profound elimination diets, taking out all the main food allergens like dairy and gluten and soy and other foods that are known allergens, and these kids can still tolerate the breast milk. This is a profound situation. Now, their guts are so disturbed, and we test for it, that they get secondary issues from it, and many of these kids have significant eczema, which is an inflammation of the skin. It's related to the gut, and these poor little babies are miserable. So that is something, yes, that we're seeing now.
The name of the book is What's Making Our Children Sick, a pediatrician Michelle Perel and Dr. Vincent Adams. You would think, though, that since the little ones, the 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, have got so many little microbes going and they're growing fast and all that, that it would be fairly easy to turn, or not easy, but it's possible to turn them around once you do the whole lifestyle changes, huh?
Yes. This situation is not doom and gloom.
Yeah, it's not you can just change it, huh?
You can fix some kids get better in 3 days, Patrick. The ones who
Three days.
Yes, some kids who just come in with, for example, bloating, gassy tummies, constipation, and they're not that sick. These are minor issues. You start changing the diet, you make a few adjustments. It usually takes about 4 weeks. I've seen kids get better in about 3 days.
Wow.
Now, I'm usually doing other things as well, but for kids who just change the diet, it could take a little bit longer. But within 4 weeks, so many of these kids feel better.
So when you're saying change the diet, Doc, you're talking get them off the usual suspects right away, because you never know with the dairy, wheat, whatever. What are some of the other ones you get them off of? And then to go totally organic, right? And is that how you start them?
You know, for your listeners, for our grandchildren, yes. There are a couple of key things I do. Is number one, they go 100% organic. Someone's got to cook in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. No takeout. None of that yucky stuff.
Okay.
Number two is I usually do take them off gluten and dairy, particularly if there is a neurologic issue, but not necessarily if they have eczema, chronic ear infections, constipation, bloated tummies. I start there. I'm pretty aggressive in getting off the inflammatory foods to see if we can just initially just try to settle their tummies down. And I usually insist, Patrick, on some type of filtered water.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have to be some fancy home system, but, you know, just even a pitcher or a filter that you can often have in the refrigerator, as long as it's changed. And those are like, yes, if I could tell families to do anything, that's what I'd have them do.
But, you know, it's interesting when you know, it's easy to start with the obvious potential culprits, the gluten, dairy, soy. But what's interesting is that most people, when they go to their doctor, if they're offered a screen for allergens, they'll only be told about the things for which they have a true allergic response, or what's called an IgE response. And what Dr. Perro does, and a lot of integrative doctors do and functional medicine doctors do, is they look for what are called food sensitivities. And these are things that show up with other immune responses, the IgG and IgA responses. And these show an immune response of some sort, but it's not enough to mount a true allergic response. Most physicians just ignore those, or they don't test for them at all. And what Michelle does is actually remove those from diet as well, and that actually makes a huge difference for people. So they can get rid of the normal culprits and still have the problem, but when they remove the peanuts or the legumes, they figure out that they've got a sensitivity to those things, and getting rid of them helps.
Have you both found some good supplementation foods, superfoods, to help the gut heal?
Yeah, there are definitely superfoods, and I can do the basics with patients, which I'll do. And if they need a step up from what I can do, I refer them to integrative or functional nutritionist. And I have some great ones here where we live in Northern California. But I find the superfoods, kids often eat the white food diet. They want white rice, white bread, white chicken. And so we try to put some green in there. And I'm a big fan of smoothies. Children like smoothies. So we get mom and dad, notice I said dad too, in the kitchen with that blender, that Vitamix, whatever they've got. And we start introducing greens. The main greens we need to get in there are greens that detoxify, like cilantro, parsley. I'd like to get ginger on board because ginger can be a natural anti-inflammatory. I'm a big fan of lemon for its vitamin C and alkalinizing qualities. And I also get put some probiotics there, you know, and then I will rotate the other veggies, kale, spinach. I'm often careful of things like oxalates, but, you know, that's, I don't want to get into too much detail, and celery. And then I start rotating them. But we add a little bit at a time to a basic juice. And pineapple is often a good way to go because kids like pineapple. I use a lot of coconut and coconut milk because most kids seem to tolerate that really well and that it has a certain kind of fat that's really good for their brain, called medium chain triglycerides. So we do that in there. And we start giving nutrition through raw food and smoothies. And it works great. And you can hide a lot of the supplements, which kids don't like necessarily to take. Kids can be very picky, as your listeners know, to change their diet. And you can sneak them in there.
So the smoothies, are the greens the basis of that? Or do you use like a coconut milk, so they could be sweet or savory smoothies, either one, of course.
I play with it. I've used coconut milk. I've used almond milk. I've used hemp milk. I've used avocado, banana. I often start with a juice base because the greens have a astringent and some of them in a very strong taste. But you can vary them and see what your child likes. Many children do like almond milk. And if parents can make it at home and not buy the box one, but you can just soak almonds. It's a very easy thing to do and give them fresh almond milk, very nutritive, organic almonds, if when possible. And so they can add that into the smoothie. But I often put them on coconut milk.
When we're just talking about folks 30, 40, 50 revolutions around the sun, a little bit older than the little ones, is this process the same as far as you can tell as healing the gut?
Yes, and adults can tolerate a lot more, and I will bring in a lot more for adults in healing the gut. I use a lot more with digestive enzymes, certain herbs that are gut healing, like slippery elm, marshmallow, various you know, formulations. And I go heavier and harder on the greens, less on the juice, way harder on the greens. And juice, just like a green apple in there. I'm a big fan of apple skins for adults. So, yeah, I up it. And I bring a lot more supplements in for adults, but depending on every child, every patient, every adult is an individual. So you have to individualize their care, which is another cornerstone of functional medicine. And you tailor it to what people need. If someone has a lot of inflammation, for example, I'm going to use a lot of turmeric and black pepper and ginger. So you kind of start tailoring it to the individual, but always heavy on the greens.
We've heard about the turmeric and black pepper kind of formula thing, and I think we've interviewed a fellow years ago that had a product that had all the right ingredients there. But something like that, are you just doing the symptomatic effort to lower inflammation and not still getting to the cause, or do these kind of herbs and spices, are they getting to the cause as well?
We're always looking for the cause, Patrick. I'd like to know why.
Yeah.
Why is that reflux? Why do they have IBS?
Yeah.
And we're always searching for the cause as we're trying to mitigate their symptoms. And many of these herbs, for example, as well as homeopathics that I use, are healing. So I use a type of homeopathy called German biologic medicine that clears their extracellular matrix from toxins and toxicants. So we are healing as we change the internal environment and the external environment. And Vincent and I, we call that eco-medicine in our book. What we're trying to do is heal the patient internally, always searching for why, as we correct the external environment. if patients do not change their external environment in terms of food, water, cleaning products, cosmetics, etc., unlikely they're going to get better or their changes in health will not be sustainable.
So if you're using chemicals in the kitchen or cosmetics that you don't really look at the ingredients too very carefully, that's affecting the little ones as well. It just adds to the mix of these strange things in the body, these foreign proteins?
Yes, it's called allostatic load. There becomes too much of a load where your body is no longer able to detoxify. The main two systems of detoxification we have in our body are gut microbes primarily, followed by your liver. Your liver is your major detox organ. So there gets to a point where your body can't sustain this toxic assault.
So it's interesting. I would just add that, mm-hmm. you talk about getting to the root cause, and that is the language that we like to use in medicine. And it certainly is one that integrative medicine hooks into, because with chronic patients, it's usually the lack of a root cause that patients are seeking. And so that's what sends them to the integrative doctor. But what's interesting is that when you look at the body and the practice of medicine from an integrative perspective, you realize the root cause is actually a complex array of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And there's not one single thing that will solve all the problems.
Yeah. And we all want this magic bullet too. Can I just take this and it's going to be better?
Right. And it doesn't work that way.
No.
It doesn't just work that way. You have to eliminate all of the toxins. You have to do all of the proactive things. And, what we focus on in the book is the food element.
Sure. Well,
which is surprisingly absent from a lot of regular doctor visits.
We adults, even though we really act like kids, we're adults. And we can, we can do the sauna like we talked about and exercise and sweat and do special things for the liver and all of that. I know a lot of people that do, coffee enemas and stuff like that. And, but how do you detox the kids?
This I do it very gently, and I use homeopathics.
Okay.
That's my tool. I use something called German biological medicine that was begun by a very brilliant German MD named Dr. Reckeweg, and I've had great success using a very gentle and slow detox, using remedies that clear liver, lymph, and kidney. In addition, I use a lot of Epsom salt baths for detoxification.
Mm-hmm.
I use the herbs that I really mentioned in the smoothies. And I'm also a big fan of ionic foot baths for toxic children. And I've had good success with that.
Huh.
So depending on the child, I use a multimodal approach. I ramp up depending on how sick they are. Not everyone requires everything. So it's really an individualistic approach. I keep saying that, but that's what it really takes. So I have a lot of tools in the tool chest, and they're totally doable and totally teachable.
We're talking with Michelle Perro, Dr. Vincent Adams, both docs and co-authors of What's Making Our Children Sick. It's just been released in the last 30 days or so. I just lost my next question, but I was going somewhere. That's okay. Well, I'm going to do this email, and dare we even mention the word, but we have to because it's part of the deal. Joan's talking about the number of vaccines that they want to give our kids is just, some at birth, it's just really insane, and I'm just confused in how to deal with this issue, and it was going to come up, right? So what are you going to do?
Well, we try to stay as neutral on that topic in the book as possible, actually. It's just too volatile an issue. I think Michelle would agree with me that vaccines are certainly an important tool in the toolkit for public health and for individual health. And there isn't a lot of research on it. So we try to stay focused on the problem of inflammation and guts. And, in fact, a number of the patients we interview in the book talk about vaccines and their mind being a trigger. But we really don't.
You just didn't
we
go
don't,
there. You didn't go there.
We don't go there. No.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing. So
too complicated.
Yeah.
We'll just take one two at a time.
No, I get it. I get it. Hey, so here's an email from Emily. She said, would one course of antibiotics disrupt my child's intestinal flora?
That's a good question. And the answer is possibly.
Possibly. Wow.
Possibly. Because every kid responds to antibiotics differently, and because we're not measuring the microbiome pre and post antibiotic usage, we don't really know. But what we suspect now that it does How much it does, we don't know. So many practitioners in traditional conventional medicine are now prescribing probiotics for when kids go on antibiotics to be taken during the course of antibiotics, and I give for a month later. Actually, I'm way more aggressive with probiotics. I give them way after. And then once we're done with the probiotic, I ask the parents to put the children on fermented food diets and start incorporating some of those fermented foods that have natural probiotics in them.
Oh, so sauerkraut and things like that.
Hummus.
Yep. Pickles, sauerkraut, kimchi for those who are inclined, kefir, yogurt, and there are a lot of good fermented foods.
Kids like pickles.
Oh, yeah.
Kids like pickles. Before we go, I'm really curious about animals eating GMO stuff and we eating animals. Do y'all have any insights on that?
Right. So, one of the big debates in the GMO world has been around the use of bovine growth hormone, which was one of the first genetically modified products. And there's a huge controversy about that and the increase in the number of hormones in the foods we eat, the animal foods that we eat, both chickens and meat products.
Right.
So that's a huge controversy. We definitely think it's a big problem and needs to be resolved. The other thing we do know is that a lot of animal feed is based on uses GM ingredients, and that's also a concern because what happens is that just like human guts, or what we know from animal studies, that the guts of those animals are also being affected and impacted, and they too have chronic health problems.
Sure they do. Yes, they do. Yeah.
And so they're being given antibiotics on a regular basis, which also then gets into the food products that we eat. So it's a huge problem. I mean, farmers and ranchers know this as well. I mean, and I really want to say that it's a very big predicament for the agricultural industries. Farmers aren't going to want to give up GM foods, seeds, and they're not going to want to stop using these products for their animals. It's economically part of the equation that they've used for years and years and years. And even though we have good evidence that not using those and using organic methods for growing animal food and also growing plant food does work. We have evidence that it produces healthier food and it is more economically viable and profitable. The word isn't out there. And in some ways, the change needs to happen as a paradigm shift for the whole agrochemical or agro-industrial world, that the government actually needs to get involved in saying, hey, we need to switch the paradigm. Or the market needs to get involved and people need to say, we won't eat the other food, we'll only eat organic now. Because they're really in a bind. They can't really get out of this problem of needing to buy, for the crop farmers, they are dependent on the seeds, they're dependent on the fertilizers and the pesticides that are used to grow the foods now. And it's not working for them financially anymore. And yet it's impossible for them to get out of it. We say in the book that if the government subsidized the organic industry or subsidized farmers to go organic at the same levels that they now subsidize the basic commodity crops, we'd probably resolve the problem and we could go fully organic.
Sure. Well, the USDA and these big agribusiness things, it's just a big problem. And it's just these guys play golf together and whatever, it's challenging. Do you think that there's got to be some hope for that to change somewhere along the line, but the amount of money that's given, we were talking about the medical model last hour. Now the amount of input in the lobbies it's huge, boy. It's really big, isn't it?
Well, Patrick, there is a way we change this, and we're doing it. And the way we do it is through moms. And why moms? Well, moms spend 85% of the household budget. So what that means is that women are in charge of money. We do the food shopping. We buy the children's clothes in general, not 100%, but in general. So this is called the tipping point. If you can get more than 5% of industry to see that what women are shopping for, it creates a shift in industry and what they're selling. And this is actually happening. Organic food sales are massive.
They're massive.
Costco
Huge.
Costco, I mean, I'm promoting Costco, but right. They have an enormous selection of organics, and they're one of the biggest buyers in the U.S. of organic food.
Yeah.
And a lot of farmers who are practical people, look at our friend Howard, are saying, hey, people want this stuff. Let's switch. That's what they want us to grow. So this can change. So many of the parents that I take care of are often women who bring the kids into the clinics. I'd say 90% are moms, by the way. So I say, you know, if women can affect this change, those are some of the people I hone in on. They're the big shoppers. Many times they're doing the cooking as well in general, but we want to change that. And so this is where the change can happen. I'm convinced it's possible. I have no doubt.
Yeah. Go ahead, Vincent. Go ahead.
Well, I think that it's not just moms. I'm really, really interested in trying to get the people I call the reluctant constituencies on board, and that includes more scientists and more doctors. I think if doctors, a lot of scientists jump on the you know, being opposed to the anti-GMO movement because they're afraid that it's going to disrupt their ability to use genetic modification technologies in biomedicine. And they're very different fields. They're really not the same thing. We're not opposed to using genetic modification, but I don't think a lot of those people who are immediately opposed to any opposition to GM foods have really done the research they need to on the way it's used in foods. And they've just taken industry's word for it. And if they actually knew what the difference was between what's happening with our food system and the beneficial use of genetic modification in the medical industry, that they would probably have a change of heart and start getting on board the way it worked with tobacco. And so that's partly who we're writing this book for. It's not just moms, but it's also for getting some of the medical professionals and health professionals out there to take a second look at this issue.
Was it Nancy Reagan who said, just say no to GMOs? No, that was, she just said, just say no to drugs, but just say no to GMOs is a good one.
Patrick, I think you need to make that sticker.
Actually, I own that URL, just say no to GMOs. So maybe we'll use that someday. I got that website years ago. I don't know. It just cost me $14. So I bought it. We'll use it someday for something.
I would say that the refinement of that would be just say no to GM foods, because GMOs can be useful in other industries. I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
We don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater on it.
We've got some good things going on, though. I know that there's some huge changes in Europe with the labeling of GMOs. I know that Whole Foods is going to be, they've had this in the work for what, 2 years, 3 years? Going to be labeling all GMO foods, I think, beginning next year. I don't know if it's going to begin in 3 weeks, but I was told it was 2018, right?
That's what I was told. 2018, they're going to label in Whole Foods.
Then there's also the big controversy, now controversial, but for a period of time, there was a recognition that glyphosate was a probable carcinogen, that has affected some change.
Well, right, I think, wasn't it labeled a carcinogen in California, you wacky kids out there on the left coast?
Yep. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Very proud of that.
Yes, we've spent some time in Sacramento, and yes, it's a Prop 65 here in California, labeled carcinogen, correct.
Well, God love John Mackey, Whole Foods. He's an old friend of mine, and he was on this GMO labeling thing years ago, and they got it done, and it's going to be a big, big game changer. And, you know, Jeff Bezos is at Amazon. You talk about the growth of organic foods. You know, he knows what he's doing. He didn't put out billions of dollars for Whole Foods because they got, you know, interesting checkout people. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
There's hope.
They know what they're doing. Terrific. Well, here we are. Well, ladies, thanks for being here. This was fun this morning, and your book is just what's making our children sick, right? Probably easy to remember that one.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Patrick, it's been delightful chatting with you. Thank you.
It's great fun. Thank you so much. And we'll send you the link to the show if you want, and you can use it wherever you'd like.
Would appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Have a happy holidays out there in wacky California.
Will do.
All right. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Patrick Timpone, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Great show this morning with these two ladies, and then Dr. Held. Important information, pass on this link, all the moms that you know, and the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents and that, so they can, get the moms thinking about the organic food and the GMO stuff. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support, and I will see you tomorrow for Open Phone Friday.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.